MacCast, Tuesday, April 23rd, 2019. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. Hey, we are back, and my voice is almost back. I am still a little bit in recovery, but I think things are sounding a lot better. So thank you for putting up with the last episode of the MacCast. Many of you were very kind and emailed me to say it sounded just fine to you. So I do really appreciate that. But we're back here. It's been another week or so. I took an extra day or two to kind of recover just a little bit more. And we have a lot of Apple and Mac news to get into. Also, some feedback from you, and I have a pretty cool thing of the moment to share with you, something that I picked up based on a recommendation actually on the iOS show, which is another podcast we do every once in a while. It used to be more regular, but if you're into iOS stuff, be sure to check that one out too. You can just search for iOS show on your favorite podcast app or in iTunes music app. Podcast app, I guess, these days on iOS. But today we're going to get into Apple and some gaming stuff. We're going to talk about what's happening with the next generation iPhone cameras, the front-facing ones this time, not just the rear-facing ones. Little Earth Day news for you from Apple's updated efforts with environmental issues. A little more details on the Qualcomm settlement. You know, I don't like talking about lawsuits too much, but hey, we've got some details on what the settlements were. And well, I want to save it. I don't want to give it away, but there's something shocking in there that surprised even me. Apple TV also getting a new executive, and shortcuts maybe making their way to your Mac in the future. And then we're going to get to some more Mac keyboard stuff. Also going to talk about managing your network connections on your Mac and your devices. A thought on the next name for macOS, and like I said, a thing of the moment for you. And that will round out this episode of the MacCast. So it should be a good one. Before we dive into it, though, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Smile. You know, Smile, we love them. They've been with the MacCast forever. I've been a fan of their software forever. And one of my favorite bits of software from them is Text Expander. And one of my favorite things about Text Expander, in addition to all the time that it saves me, is that they are constantly working on it. It gets better with age, better and better. And they have a new version out, Text Expander 6.5 for macOS and 2.0 for Windows, which sports a new visual editor for your snippets. So yeah, some people don't know, Text Expander is completely cross-platform, and you can take your snippets with you, Mac, Windows, what have you. And that's great for those of you who maybe use a Mac at home or have to use Windows at work, or maybe even vice versa. Maybe you use Windows at home and you use a Mac at work. Doesn't matter. Text Expander will work for you. And the new editor really makes it easier to see and edit your snippets, including doing things like fill-ins and dates and date math. And so many of you probably know this already, but basically Text Expander allows you to set up a little snippet, a little short couple of key clicks, and then you can expand a large bunch of text, everything from a word to a phrase, a whole entire form, a giant template, whatever you want, and you can do that everywhere you type. It doesn't matter what program you're in, Text Expander runs any place on your Mac. And so it is absolutely fabulous. You should get yourself a copy if you don't have one already. And if you do have a copy of Text Expander and you love telling everybody about it, you might consider joining their affiliate program, and then you can get a little extra for yourself when your friends and family purchase a copy of Text Expander. Best of all, listeners of this show, you get 20% off of your first year with Text Expander. Just visit textexpander.com/podcast to learn more about Text Expander and get all of the details. And again, a huge thank you to Smile for their continued support of the MacCast. I think I told you this when I covered Apple's last special event, the one about all of the services, but I was surprised coming out of that that actually one of the services I'm most excited about is Apple Arcade. That's their new subscription game service. And it's because I don't play a ton of games on iOS, but when I do, I tend to gravitate towards the, you know, one-time purchase ones, the things that don't have in-app purchase. They're a little bit more expensive, $5 to $10, maybe even $20 for some certain games. And so I can see myself kind of covering the cost depending upon how Apple decides to ultimately price that out. And for all intents and purposes, it looks like they are focusing on really top-end titles, and they've been willing to put some money behind it. We knew that they were giving money to developers to help the development of those first initial 100 titles, but we didn't have a lot of details on the amounts. Well, this week, Financial Times is reporting that Apple is actually laying down some pretty serious investments for those titles on their upcoming service. Their sources say that Apple is spending upwards of $500 million, half a billion dollars, on the more than 100 launch titles. So you break that out, you know, it's about 5 million per title. Now, it's probably not falling that way, but imagine that, you know, 5 million to a developer, especially an indie developer, to develop a title. That's a significant investment and probably is going to be more than covering just the costs of developing the game. So you think about marketing and all the other things that they have to do. The report also says that Apple is offering developers even bigger bonuses if they will agree to exclusivity agreements where they release the titles on Apple Arcade for a few months before they roll it out to other platforms or other services. So that is a good bonus again for developers. And it's nice to see Apple putting that investment in. One of the ideas behind Apple Arcade, I think, is to get away from the race to the bottom pricing that a lot of freemium games have on the App Store and give another place for fans and people who really like certain game titles and quality indie games and things like that, a place to go to get some really great experiences. And what's really cool is it looks like the cash and incentives are going to be pretty much par for the course for Apple Arcade. So Apple is going to continue to invest in and bring on new developers, new indie titles. And it's not just indies. They also are also doing some bigger titles with some bigger publishers and things like that. So all of that, though, just goes to show how serious they are about this effort. And I, again, am just getting more excited about it launching in the fall. And I'm excited to see what it is. I'm hoping the pricing is reasonable and not too expensive. My gut instinct, and I think I said this in that episode, is that I think that $9.99 per month price point that Apple rolled out with Apple News Plus, I think that's going to be standard across the board. Apple seems to like to simplify things when it comes to pricing and kind of have one price point. So I think all of their services will be in that range, if not exactly that price point. And, just to remind you, Apple Arcade is a monthly recurring subscription service. It will give you access to over 100 ad-free titles, and those titles can actually be downloaded for offline play, again, as long as you continue to subscribe to the service. So I think it's going to be great, not for everyone, and I think that's the point. I think Apple is diversifying its services, right? You have News Plus, just a PSA, a service reminder, if you did sign up for Apple News Plus, the trial on the first day, we are fast approaching the renewal date. So if you're not planning on keeping your Apple News Plus subscription, you're going to want to cancel it before your credit card gets charged or your iTunes account gets charged. But I think that's great. Like different services, I know a lot of people who are enjoying Apple News Plus and are very excited about it. I think I'm likely not going to continue the service because, again, I just don't open the news app all that frequently. As much as I enjoyed the extra content and having access to that, it's just not something that fits into my daily schedule. But for a lot of people, it does. Games is something a little bit more up my alley. I like to pop in and play a game now and then on my iOS device. And I think with the amount of money I spend on titles every month, I can probably justify the cost, and I'll be able to access more games and probably get more titles than I normally would if I was paying per title. So I'm excited about that. I'm also excited about the TV service, although, you know, that's getting interesting with some of the other players in the market, especially Disney Plus, which was announced and coming in at a price point at $6.99 a month, I think is what US is what they announced that service at. That's a really competitive price, and I think Apple's going to have a little bit of a hard time competing with that. But we talked about that, and I did receive some feedback from a listener mentioning that, you know, Netflix is great and all those other services are great too, but at the end of the day, for a lot of people, it's just about the quality of a few titles. So if any one service just has a handful of really great shows and you enjoy all of those shows, you can ultimately probably justify the cost. And I totally agree with that. The question becomes, you know, if Apple is focusing on quality and storytelling, which they say they are all of the few titles that they have going to be really big hits that everybody wants to watch? And that's kind of a tall order, but if anybody can pull it off, it probably will be Apple. But regardless, I am excited about some of the new services, especially the new game service, and it is really exciting to see Apple putting some serious investment behind it. Something I've been wrestling with is what to call the next generation of the iPhone. It used to be easy when we actually had a numbering scheme, right? You had the iPhone 7 and the next one would be the iPhone 8. Now that Apple's moved to the iPhone 10 and then 10S, I'm not really sure what to call the next version of the iPhone. I guess just the next iPhone. As we talk about these rumors, I was thinking maybe the iPhone Next or the iPhone Next S. No, is that too cheesy? I don't know. Regardless, we're hearing rumors about the next iPhone. We've been talking about the new triple lens camera system for the past few episodes here on the MacCast. Now this week, Ming-Chi Kuo is predicting some serious upgrades for the iPhone's true depth camera system as well, or true depth camera, really. Basically, the front-facing camera, what used to be called the FaceTime camera. Excuse me, I almost said EyeSight camera, which is the rear-facing camera, which I think now Apple just simply calls the camera. So on the iPhone, we have the camera and the true depth camera. Ming-Chi Kuo is saying the true depth camera is going to get a bump up from its current 7-megapixel configuration to a 12-megapixel configuration, and also add a new lens component going up from a 4-element lens system to a 5-element system. So nice little update there. Another good bit of good news is he is saying that both the 6.5-inch and the 5.8-inch OLED models, those phones are both going to get the triple lens camera system. There had been some rumors saying that maybe just the larger device, the 6.5-inch, would get the triple lens upgrade. But Ming-Chi Kuo seems to think both models will, and also that third lens is going to be a brand new super wide 12 megapixel lens. So should add a lot of options to the photography. Apple should be able to do a lot of new things with that lens, and also with their software tweaks and tricks that they often do to take even more advantage of it. And it's also expected that extra lens system will play into some of the augmented AR kit kinds of stuff as well. So expect a lot of stuff, software and hardware. Also in the Ming-Chi Kuo report, he says that Apple is looking at a new coating to kind of hide the lenses, make them blend in a little bit better with the look of the phone. So they have this new black coating that he says will make the lenses inconspicuous, kind of giving them a stealthy look. So they don't show up so much. And if you've seen some of the, you know, what I call the Ritz cracker bump, the square bump with the triangular oriented lens system in there, it does look a little weird because it's not symmetrical. So anything they can do to hide that, I think would be ultimately a good thing. And there's also some good news in here for fans of the iPhone XR. Ming-Chi Kuo says that the 6.1-inch iPhone XR is likely to get a bump up to the dual-lens camera system of the current models. So getting that extra lens in there, and that device, the iPhone XR upgrade this year, will get the same front-facing camera as the 6.5-inch and 5.8-inch OLED models, so that new 12-megapixel true-depth camera. So all in all, some nice camera updates expected in the 2019 version of the iPhone. As for what's happening in 2020, That's when we're expected to get 5G support now that Apple has settled up things with Qualcomm. The 2019 models are not expected to add 5G, and that's, I think, pretty okay because rollout of 5G is going to take a while. I don't think it's going to be widespread in 2019. Maybe by the end of the year, it'll be available in a few places, but it's not going to be in wide rollout. So I don't think you're going to be really missing out on too much, at least in most areas or most regions. But in 2020, Ming-Chi Kuo thinks that Apple will be using 5G modems, not just from Qualcomm, but also from Samsung as well. And he thinks that rollout will actually drive iPhone sales up a bit. He believes iPhone sales are going to grow from between 188 million to 192 million units in 2019, and then continue to trend upward to 195 million to 200 million units by 2020. And those numbers sound great. Increases are great, especially since we've been seeing iPhone sales declines over the past few quarters. But still, 200 million units is below the heyday of the iPhone. Just for a reference point, 211 to 231 million units were sold in various years between 2015 and 2018. So we're not getting back to the heyday of iPhone, but Apple maintaining a steady stream and not really declining too much. And I think ultimately that's the best we can really expect. And you know, with some of the new features, I believe there's going to be a lot of people looking to upgrade. As part of Earth Day, Apple has highlighted some of its newer environmental efforts, and they say they are going to be increasing the number of places that you can actually take your iPhone in for recycling. So if you have an old iPhone device, you may be already aware that you can take it back to an Apple store or return it to apple.com, and it will be properly disposed of or recycled or repurposed. Now they're saying you will be able to, in the US, take them into Best Buy stores. And if you're in the Netherlands, you can take them to KPN retailers. So that should make it a little bit more easy to get your iPhones recycled. They also shared some details on how their recycling and repurposing efforts have been going, specifically talking about their iPhone disassembly robot, Daisy, and her performance. Apple says that they've processed nearly 1 million devices using Daisy, and now Daisy can actually disassemble about 1.2 million devices per year, and is also able to work with 15 different iPhone models. And that second part, I think, is a pretty amazing feat, right? It'd be one thing to build one machine that could disassemble one kind of iPhone, but to have a single machine that can actually recognize and adapt and disassemble 15 different iPhone models, that's a pretty significant feat of engineering. And all of the materials that are reacquired by Daisy, or I guess most of the materials, are put back into the manufacturing process. So Apple is reusing a lot of that material. We know a lot of the aluminum is showing up in the cases of a lot of the new Apple products, including the iPad Pros and also the new MacBook Airs. In 2018, Apple says they actually refurbished 7.8 million Apple devices. So another thing that they'll commonly do is when they get devices back in, they will refurbish them, use them as replacement devices if you have a problem with your unit and Apple has to turn around and replace it. So great way to keep a lot of that stuff out of the landfill and keep it in service, which is great to see Apple doing. And then finally, as another part of their recycling efforts, Apple is looking to improve how recycling goes in many different areas. They say that they are going to be opening a new 9,000 square foot material recovery lab in Austin, Texas. That's going to employ Apple engineering teams and academics who are going to be working on finding solutions to recycling problems. So Apple, again, pretty big on their environmental efforts. They also, I think, came out with their environmental report this year, and not surprisingly, they are doing great. And I think it's nice to see them kind of setting an example for other companies, other industries, when it comes to environmental efforts. You know, nothing wrong with that at all. And I applaud their efforts. This week, we're getting some speculative details from analysts on the specifics of the settlement between Apple and Qualcomm over the modems and patent licensing and all that sort of stuff. And I have to admit that the details coming out are quite baffling to me, and I think may give an indication on just how bad things were for Apple with them relying on Intel for their modems. One of Apple's biggest issues in the lead up to all of this, and one of the reasons why they went down this path of moving to Intel, abandoning Qualcomm, stopping payments to Qualcomm, and all these other things, fighting them in court, was they had this feeling that Qualcomm shouldn't really be getting a piece of every iPhone sale as a licensing royalty. And that's how things were set up. Every iPhone sold, Qualcomm got a cut of that. Not just for the pieces and the devices, you know, the components that were in the iPhone that were licensed, it was actually on the whole sale price of the iPhone. So Apple was paying a lot for that. And according to a UBS report this week, they're suggesting that after the settlement, Apple could be paying Qualcomm from between $8 to $9 per iPhone sold. That price point, or that payment, would actually be larger than what they were paying before they went into this lawsuit. Previous estimates set the payments at between $5 to $7.50 per iPhone. So Apple actually coming out of all this fight with a worse deal. And that's in addition to the fees that they have to pay between $5 to $6 billion in a bullet payment, or basically payments for the amounts that Apple had stopped paying or told their manufacturers to withhold. Another interesting thing, something that's also confused me about all of this, is that for the licensing fees, Apple actually doesn't pay Qualcomm directly. They actually have their manufacturing partners, their suppliers, pay those fees. And then what happens is that Apple reimburses those companies. And those fees are much higher than what Apple actually pays. The suppliers, I think, pay as much as $20 per iPhone to Qualcomm. And then what happens is that Apple reimburses the suppliers for those payments. And then Qualcomm provides rebates back to Apple for the difference, or for a difference in the amount. And that basically cuts Apple unit costs back down to that $5 to $7.50 amount, or now what I guess going forward is going to be that $8 to $9 price range. So a lot of money moving around in very weird and complicated ways. And Qualcomm really getting a lot of benefit from Apple selling iPhones for just one little bit of technology that they have in there, albeit a very important bit of technology. I'm not discounting that, but you know, we're talking about a patent license. Qualcomm is not making iPhones. They're not designing iPhones. They're not doing the R&D for iPhones. It's amazing to me how much they're making off of that, and that Apple is being forced to pay it. I think I can understand why Apple was upset about all of this. It just doesn't make sense. But the fact that they're willing to have that kind of settlement and pay that much just to me kind of proves really what a bad spot Apple was in when it came to securing 5G modems for their devices in 2020. Like, Intel was not going to be able to deliver, and they didn't have anybody else to go back to except Qualcomm. So I think they were really in many, many ways forced into this settlement. I don't think they're going to be happy about it. I do think we're going to see them really ramping up. We already have, actually, but really ramping up their efforts to move to their own modem designs and get away from Qualcomm again as quickly as possible. So I guess they're figuring, hey, we'll pay this pain point payment in the short term, but in the long term, we'll ultimately come out ahead. And so it'll be interesting to watch those efforts and see how rapidly they progress. But I was just a little shocked by this analysis of what Apple actually was paying. At that last Apple event, Apple kind of detailed a lot of the services that they're going to be bringing out in the next year. And of course, one of the biggest ones of those is Apple TV Plus, their new video subscription service. And so now that we kind of know some of the programming that they're working on and some of the things they're going to be doing with that, of course, the next big part of the effort is going to be a giant marketing push to get all of us to sign up for Apple TV Plus. And this week we got some news about a new hire at Apple within their video, worldwide video division, that is a good one, a strategic one, and likely going to help them with that effort. Apple has hired former Lionsgate Executive Vice President Danielle De Palma as Senior Film and TV Series Marketing Executive for Apple TV Plus. This is according to Deadline. She's actually going to be reporting directly to Apple head of video marketing, Chris Van Omberg, who was hired earlier and is a former Sony TV executive. So a lot of people have kind of questioned if Apple should be entering the video service or doing video programming at all. Like, this is not in their wheelhouse. And I think this has come up on the MacCast recently as well. And this is something that I worried about, man, maybe over a decade ago, when Apple started branching out into other areas, including moving into cell phones, right? I questioned their ability to actually be able to get into the cell phone market, a market that presumably they knew nothing about. And boy, was I wrong on that one, right? Very, very successful. And I also worried when they started doing the whole Apple Music subscription thing. You know, could they pull that off? And that's been hugely successful. And I think what Apple has proven is that the way that they do that is they hire all the right people. They hire very talented, smart people in those fields, and they get quickly up to speed. And they also acquire additional companies, additional technologies to support those efforts. And they've proven time and time again that they can kind of do it. And I think this is more, you know, these hires that we keep hearing about, this is more along those lines. And so I think they're going to do quite well with the new video subscription service. I think it's going to take several years to grow, just like the Apple Music service did. It didn't happen overnight, but over the course of 3 to 5 years, I think they could become a major player in that space. Not going to be easy, but again, I think hiring smart, talented people in those fields is a great way to go. And this is just another example of that. And then finally, in the news for this week, you know, many of us kind of lamented seeing the abandonment of Automation and Automator by Apple on the Mac. I know Automator is still around, but it doesn't feel like Apple had it in active development. There was the whole Saul Segoyan thing with him leaving Apple, and there was a lot of questioning about what Apple was going to do. And then Apple turned around and bought Workflow on iOS, and they brought us Siri Shortcuts, and that's been a great move back into Automation and doing more things with apps. And now we're getting ready for a Worldwide Developer Conference. We're going to start hearing about macOS and some of the new features. And this week we heard that Siri Shortcuts may be making its way to the Mac using some of that new Marzipan technology that Apple's been using. And that's how they brought apps like the News app and the Home app to the Mac, and it seems like they're continuing forward with that because we are hearing that Siri Shortcuts may make an appearance in macOS 10.15, and also that Screen Time may make its way. And I absolutely really love Screen Time. I don't know if you've used it on your iOS devices. I think it's great for families. I'm able to kind of monitor and keep an eye on my kids' Screen Time usage. Not that I do much with that information because they're actually honestly pretty good about self-regulating, but it's nice to be able to just pop in and check and look. And I like seeing what I'm doing on my devices too, and to be able to do that from my Mac and maybe even include some of my Mac Screen Time stats, that would be great if that's all rolled in. And all of these things are expected to be demoed at this year's Worldwide Developer Conference. They're claiming that Siri Shortcuts will come as a downloadable app from the Mac App Store. And the only limitation that's a little bit disappointing is that they are saying that Siri Shortcuts will likely be limited to only work with Marzipan apps, so other iOS-based apps that have made their way to the Mac and won't really integrate with native Mac apps, but I presume that's why we still have Automator on the Mac. So I think eventually those things will be changed and merged. I think we're kind of in a transition period, but we're also hearing that Apple is building Marzipan in a way that it should be really easy for most developers to port their iOS apps to the Mac, like literally for a lot of apps, just a checkbox on the build process in Xcode. So expect a lot more apps to be making their way from iOS to the Mac in future versions of macOS, macOS 10.15 and beyond. There's also some rumors that a new Apple ID management panel is going to show up in the system preferences. This would help improve management and setup of your Apple IDs and also doing that with family sharing. Few other updates that we're expected to see are things like iMessage effects, confetti, lasers, and fireworks making their way to macOS. And another few goodies on the iPhone front, more Siri support for third-party apps, also the ability to download photos into third-party apps directly, so you won't have to import apps from your devices or SD cards right into photos. You will actually be able to bring them into apps like Dropbox or the Files apps directly and then do stuff with them from there. And then finally, Federico Vitici from Mac Stories said on the Connected podcast that he has sources telling him that future iPads could be getting USB mouse support, something that a lot of people have wanted for a while. This feature would come, though, via a new accessibility update, so you'd be able to plug in a USB-C mouse directly to your iOS device and then enable a feature in accessibility settings and then be able to use that mouse in various apps. And this does seem to be something that is being backed up by developer Steve Trotten-Smith. We don't have a timeline for when this is going to happen. It could happen this year. It might not happen at all, but it's looking more and more likely. And as far as how the experience would work, Steve Trotten-Smith seems to think that instead of an arrow cursor on the iPad, what you would get is a little dot. I would imagine it would look very similar to the iOS simulator, on the Mac, where you get a single dot, and then maybe if you hold down a modifier key, you get multiple dots to do multi-finger gestures, say, with a mouse, which would be very, very interesting. So between that and keyboard support, right? It's looking like iPads are looking more and more potentially like notebooks, and those lines are blurring even further. Again, Apple, I don't think, is going to go full on, you know, tablet Mac hybrid, but never say never, right? And we seem to be moving in that direction. So if you have thoughts and opinions on this, shoot me some feedback, maccast@gmail.com. But with that, that is going to do it for the news. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a couple show sponsors, starting with Malwarebytes. You know, we all know that Apple and Macs come with a bunch of built-in protections to keep us as safe as possible from things like viruses and malware. But ultimately, there's a flaw in that protection, and the flaw is us. If it's not you, and it likely isn't, it could be a friend or a family member who isn't quite as tech savvy as you are. Maybe they're not as aware. And we try as much as possible to kind of help protect them from themselves. But ultimately, things happen. I've seen it happen. I have friends and family members who I look at their computers. I run Malwarebytes. And guess what? There is malware on there, right? There's trackers. There's ad trackers. All of those things. And you've likely heard me mention Malwarebytes on the show in the past. That's because I think it's really awesome. I think it's one of the best and easiest tools on the Mac for quickly scanning, removing, and preventing malware. And they use proven technology that absolutely crushes any threats of Mac malware. Malwarebytes scans on the average Mac happen in under 30 seconds, so it's fast and easy, and removing adware and unwanted programs that slow down your Mac is super simple with Malwarebytes. And if you need more advanced protection, Malwarebytes detects and removes viruses, ransomware, and other malware in real time with their advanced anti-malware technology. They can catch dangerous threats automatically, so you're protected without even having to think about it. Finally, cybersecurity smart enough for the Mac. Visit malwarebytes.com/Mac for your free download and a 14-day trial of their premium offering. That's malwarebytes.com/Mac, MalwareBytes.com/Mac. And a big thank you to Malwarebytes for their support of the show. I'd also like to thank Experian and tell you about their new Experian Boost service. You know, the better your credit score, the easier it is to get the stuff you want, or the less you have to pay to get the stuff you want. So the question is, why is it so hard to raise your credit score? Well, for the first time ever, Experian Boost is going to provide you a way to raise your credit score by doing something you're already doing, paying your utility bills, your cell phone bill. You know, I have pretty good credit right now, but it actually took me years to get it that way, and it certainly wasn't easy. Most of the ways in the past to improve your credit score, those can take months or even years like they did in my case. And with Boost, you can increase your credit scores instantly. Boost is free to use and only available from Experian. Look, you're already paying your bills like water, gas, electric, cable, your cell phone. You're doing those on time. So why shouldn't you get credit for that on your credit score? With Boost, you can. And best of all, Boost is easy. You can sign up in minutes and increase your score instantly. As a matter of fact, most people who Boost increase their scores by more than 10 points. It's frankly amazing it's taken so long for someone to actually do this. So if you'd like to boost your FICO score instantly for free, Boost is only available at Experian.com/MacCast. That's Experian.com/MacCast, Experian.com/MacCast, and a big thank you to Experian and Boost for their support of the show. We've been talking quite a bit on the past few episodes about the new MacBook Pro, MacBook Air, let's just call it the new MacBook Butterfly keyboard, and specifically about the issues that have been making the rounds again. We've been hearing about these since what? Since about 2016, when that new design came out. And this most recent round was actually kicked off by a Wall Street Journal report by Joanna Stern, who had an issue with her new 2018 MacBook Air. That actually prompted a rare apology from Apple. And still, Apple, even in that apology, has been stating that this issue impacts a, quote, very small percentage of customers. And I have to say that I have no reason not to believe Apple on that. I know it seems like it comes up a lot. We do know that these issues are happening. It's not that the keyboards are perfect or that they are immune, but it does seem to be fairly isolated. When I bring this up in the MacCast community, I don't get a lot of responses from people saying, I have the issue. What I often get more of is responses from people who say, I don't have the issue and I don't know what all the hubbub is about. Still, though, I have received a lot of concerned emails and voicemails from listeners, like the one from Brian that we shared on the last show, that because of these reports, they're concerned about buying a new MacBook or a new MacBook Pro. They're wondering, am I going to get hit by this problem? Is it going to be an issue for me? And so that's why I thought it was great this week when Dan chimed in on this issue with some of his own experiences, and he wanted to share a little bit of a different perspective. So here's what Dan had to say.
Hey, Adam, how you doing? This is Dan over in the Bay Area, California. I used to see you at the Macworld shows in San Francisco. Hopefully you remember me, okay? I wanted to give you some feedback about the MacBook Pro keyboard, I guess you can say debacle. I have been buying Mac since 1998, so I exclusively, so I have lots of experience with all the machines. I've grown with Apple. I haven't always agreed to everything they've made. But to be honest, Adam, I absolutely love the current iteration of the MacBook Pro. I think the build quality is as best as it's been in years. I actually love it. Now, I have had the 2016 MacBook Pro 15-inch. I had the 2017 MacBook Pro 15-inch, and I currently have the 2018 MacBook Pro 15-inch 6-core. My 2016 MacBook Pro, I did have one stuck key the first week of ownership, but I think it lasted a couple of minutes and it was over. I didn't have any more problem with that. But I had some other issues with the machine throughout the year, and so Apple ended up replacing the machine with the 2017. That one, the keyboard was 100% rock solid. I had no issues with it at all. I type for a living, so I work at home, so I have to use this machine every single day. There was some issues with the screen, and so I had to send in for service for Apple, and FedEx damaged it in shipping, and so Apple gave me a 2018 MacBook Pro. I've used this machine every single day. Not one issue with the keyboard whatsoever. Now, you know, I absolutely love the butterfly keyboard. I like the flat design. Some people may not love it, but I absolutely love it. When I go to my iMac to type, it feels more mushy on the keys now. Now, I've had no issues with this keyboard at all. What's going on right now is, you know, the Apple of 1998 is not the same as the Apple of 2019. The company has gotten very, very big. Unfortunately, the social media has gotten very, very big. And anyone who doesn't care for Apple or hates Apple or whatever, they exacerbate issues. There's a website called Mac Rumors, which is all about just very much negativity about Apple products. I no longer go to that website any longer because I can't even enjoy my Mac anymore. I don't feel like sometimes I enjoy my Mac. There's people who do not own these products who will listen to someone else complain about it, and then they will take and drive it all over the internet, everywhere. Oh my gosh, Apple's done some terrible things. They've committed crimes. It just ends up being that way, unfortunately. And I'm not discounting anyone who's had issues with the keyboard. I just mentioned my 2016 was like that. It's just that when one person has a complaint, 100 more people will take it and push it all over the internet with social media just because it's Apple. And it gets to a point where it seems like no other laptop manufacturer has any problems with their product, which we all know that's not true. Now, I was just watching a video on YouTube from a big YouTuber reviewing a Lenovo laptop. Now, at the end, it was a ThinkPad. Right at the end of the video, he says, this is a better product than what Apple's doing with the MacBook Pro. This whole review had nothing to do with the MacBook Pro. Yet, after he said that, there's a ton of comments that were all negative about dongles and just jokes and stuff about the MacBook Pro. And it's just unnecessary because the video wasn't about that. So as soon as Apple's name comes up, any Apple haters are out there are just going to push a bunch of negativity all over. And I think we should really be hearing more from actual owners, and rather than just someone who's heard something negative and is scared to buy. I have full respect over the person that called in to your show on the last show about his concerns about the person from Engadget had spoken up about her MacBook Air keyboard. But it doesn't mean everyone's going to have those issues, and it shouldn't make a person fearful. I mean, Apple is offering a one-year warranty right without the AppleCare in the first place. They're not going to be selling these computers at them in their stores if they know for a fact that the keyboard is going to break automatically with every customer. It just doesn't happen. Computers are going to have problems regardless. I've had computer problems with every one of my Macs. Okay, but Apple is not going to do that. It would cost them too much money to keep on repairing things through the one-year warranty. So there's no way that this is going on, and no one should be so fearful. It's just that with social media and Apple's popularity, how big the company has grown, there's more haters that are trying to make every decision Apple makes as if they committed a crime. That just isn't true. That's my own personal take. So I just want to let you know how I felt about the whole thing, and that's it. I will be continuing listening to your show. I always love it. And you take care. Thanks so much, Adam.
Hey, Dan. Yeah, of course I remember you from Macworld. I miss those days. Macworld, iWorld. Wish it would come back at some point. But we have Mac Stock now, so that's a great conference to go to. They're they're getting ready to ramp up this summer. So if you haven't been out there, unfortunately, I'm not going to make it out there this year. Hope to make it out maybe next year again. But that's a great conference and a great fill-in for Macworld. But I remember hanging out with you at the Intercontinental with Leo Laporte and Andy Iannocco. I'm pretty sure we had a drink there. So definitely remember you. Thank you for all of this great feedback. Really do appreciate your thoughts on this. And I super appreciate you kind of waylaying the fears of maybe some potential buyers out there that, you know, this isn't as widespread as maybe the media seems to make it out to be. I am going to defend the media a little bit, though. I'm still a pretty big fan of Mac Rumors. I don't find their site to be super negative. I try to be, as you know, here on the show, as balanced as possible, right? And you were very clear in your voice message there that you're not denying that these issues exist either. You're just saying that the media, social media, and the internet and sort of the world we live in can tend to take these things and blow them out of proportion. They can create what people refer to as FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And that definitely happens. And it's not just a thing that just happens to Apple either, right? It happens to other companies as well. And those statements that you said about, you know, people making comments about certain things and not really knowing the products or understanding it, but just taking what's been in the media and parroting it and doing parody of it and doing, jokes and things like that. We see that a lot in this community too. Not just the Apple community. I've seen it done by some Apple fans to Android people as well, right? If we want to take something from the current sort of news cycle, there's a lot of people making fun of Samsung now for the Galaxy Fold and all of the issues that cropped up with that product. And here's Samsung, they're trying to do an amazing new innovative thing that's never been done before. And yeah, there's going to be bumps in the road. There's going to be problems. Maybe they should have done a little bit more testing up front, but does anybody here remember the issues with the antenna in the iPhone? Yeah, that got blown out of proportion in the media as well, but it was an issue that Apple had to deal with. And Samsung's having to deal with their own issue. They had to deal with battery issues, and there were plenty of people making fun of Samsung for their battery stuff. So all technology companies, as they're putting out new technology, are going to run into issues as they're trying to innovate, as they're trying to push the bar forward. They may potentially run into problems, right? And it's just the world that we live in. I think the important thing to remember, and a lot of the stuff that you're pointing out in your comment there, is we have to maintain perspective. And I try to bring that perspective here on the MacCast. I hope that's what I do. And having great feedback from the community like this is really helpful in doing that, right? We can have this conversation. We can say, look, this is what's going on in our community. This is what's happening. Isn't this kind of crazy? Right? And we can all point at it and say, let's not try to do that. Let's try to be a little more understanding or have a little more insight or understand the thing a little bit deeper than the headline or the 140 character, I guess 288 character tweet. Right? You can't get all the information from that. And I think that's why a lot of people listen to the show, they listen to other podcasts, and they read a bit more. And then I think the responsibility on the backside of that is we're the geeks, right? We're the people that are into this technology, and we have to take that information and we have to disperse it out into our wider community, especially that wider community of non-tech people who a lot of these stories, when they get blown this big, make their way to mainstream media, right? And even out there on the fringes, or more so out there on the fringes, they get even more muted. It's like a really bad game of telephone, right? And there's a lot of misinformation at that point. And again, that misinformation that gets repeated on Facebook or whatever social media those people are using, and it just snowballs. And so I totally get your point in all of this. And like I said, I'm not hearing huge issues with this keyboard thing from the Mac community. And I agree, there are fans of the keyboard. There are not fans of the keyboard. Regardless of how you feel about it, though, this seems to be the direction Apple has chosen to go in. And I think they're going to, as I talked about on, I think it was the last episode, I think they're going to continue to iterate and improve on this. So again, thanks for your voicemail. And I hope to see you again someday, maybe at an event, maybe at something like MacStock. Another thing we like to do here on MacCast is help our fellow Mac users out with some tips and tricks and answer questions. This week I got a question from Michael, who wrote in because after 10 years on the same iMac, and that's amazing to have any computer that you use for 10 years. I actually have a 2006 Mac Mini that I still use. So, you know, we know Macs have great longevity. You can use them for a really long time. But after 10 years, Michael upgraded to a new iMac model. I'm assuming a 2018 model, which those things are sweet. I've been looking at them, eyeballing them. I probably want one of them for myself, although I can't really justify it at this point. I have a really great operating 2015 MacBook Pro that I have no issues with. But Michael upgraded, and now with his new machine, he has access to some of the newer features that are built into Macs, including continuity, which is one of my favorite features about more modern Macs. And one thing related to continuity is the ability to unlock your Mac via your Apple Watch. So Michael has an Apple Watch and he's enjoying the new unlock feature. But as many of you know, that feature relies on Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, and having Wi-Fi enabled is a thing. Michael, however, has a wired Ethernet connection and he prefers to use that connection. So he emailed in and he wants to use the unlock feature, but he also wants to use wired networking. And so the question was, can I run both Wi-Fi and Ethernet networks in parallel? Can I have both turned on at the same time? And I think the bigger part of that question is, if I can, how does that work, right? Like, how does it know whether to use Wi-Fi or Ethernet? And probably the bigger thing is if you're hardwired, you would want it to always use the hardwired connection if it's available, right? Because it's going to be faster. It's just a better, more reliable connection. As awesome as Wi-Fi is, it has its issues, right? It has latencies, it has interference problems, all those sorts of things. And so the answer, Michael, is absolutely yes. You can run both in parallel. And the good news is that your Mac can even do it smartly. You can tell it which connection method you prefer. Really easy to do from the network control panel. So you just go into System Preferences, go into the network control panel, and then click on the little settings icon, the thing that looks like a little cog or a little widget. A cog, I guess, is the right thing, a sprocket. I don't know what to call that thing. Cog icon is usually what I call it. You can click on that, and then in the drop-down menu, choose Set Service Order. And that is actually going to give you a list of all of the network interfaces that you have on your Mac, and then you can drag to change the preferred order. So put your most preferred one at the top, so that's likely going to be your Ethernet option, and then put Wi-Fi under that. And if you have other kinds of networking, you can do networking over FireWire and some other things. You might have that stuff in there. I think another common one is networking over Bluetooth. But you can also manage those connections in the same area. If you just select them from the list, there's little plus and minus icons on there, and you can actually remove network interfaces, maybe any network interfaces that you're not using. But you can move those all around, change the service order, click OK, set it up that way, and that way you can have both Wi-Fi and Ethernet turned on. But if Ethernet is the preferred network and you're connected to an Ethernet cable with your Mac, it's going to use that connection as the main connection, and then you should still be able to use your continuity features that are working over your Wi-Fi and your Bluetooth and all that sort of stuff. So I hope that helps you out. You can also set up another thing you can do in that System Preferences networking area is you can set up the preferred order of known Wi-Fi networks. So if you connect to various Wi-Fi networks, maybe one at work, one at home, maybe when you're out and about, you have some common open Wi-Fi hotspots or just Wi-Fi hotspots that you connect to at various places like Starbucks or those sorts of areas, you can actually control the order and the preference of those networks and add or remove those networks from the System Preferences Networks tab as well. In this case, you're going to go to that control panel and you're going to click on the Advanced button, and then you want to go to the Wi-Fi tab and you'll see a list of the preferred networks. And you may or may not recognize some of the networks on here depending upon how much this list is built up. But again, you can click on an item in that list. You can click the little minus icon at the bottom to remove it, and you can also click and drag them around to set the preferred order. A few other things you can also do in this control panel, you can click or unclick the auto join option. So this is one where you might, if you have like a open Wi-Fi connection, say like Starbucks as a place that you go to, you might want to uncheck that auto join option, especially if you're planning on using something like a VPN when you're out and about. That way, when you get your laptop into Starbucks, it's not going to automatically join their network. It'll give you a moment to enable your VPN and then go manually select that network. So it'll still be a known network in your list, but you can choose to manually join it when you are ready. So just a few other things that you can do in the network control panel. And then I guess lastly, while we're on the subject of Ethernet and our Mac devices, a lot of people don't know that you can actually run your iOS devices on a wired connection. And all you really need is a USB to Ethernet adapter, either a USB-C to Ethernet adapter or a Lightning to Ethernet adapter. Either will work. You can get one from Apple, and you can actually hardwire an iOS device into a network. And this can be really handy if you have an iPad. Maybe you want to repurpose an iPad on your network for something. You can actually hardwire it into your Ethernet network using an adapter. And I'm going to have a thing of the moment pick for those of you who have iPad Pros with USB-C connections. That's real handy if you want to do a wired connection to that device. So I hope that answers your question and helps you out, Michael. I think I did mention earlier that Worldwide Developer Conference is right around the corner, WWDC 2019. And of course, one of the things we're expecting Apple to show off there is macOS, and maybe tell us the name of that version of macOS. And Les this week sent me an email to kind of put a bid in, you know, his prediction on the next name for macOS. And when he revealed it to me, I think he could be onto something here. You know, or may or may not know, I guess, depending upon how much you know your Apple history, that back in 2013, Apple switched from using names of big cats like Lion, Leopard, Mountain Lion for macOS to the names of places in California. And the first one was Mavericks, which is a surf spot, I think, in Northern California. And then we got El Capitan, Sierra, High Sierra, and now Mojave, right? So all locations here in California. Well, Les pointed out in his email that after Apple's services event, you know, they seem to be pretty fixated on entertainment and maybe celebrities. So he says, hey, doesn't it seem kind of logical, or wouldn't you think and predict that maybe the next version of macOS would be macOS Hollywood? And I thought that makes a lot of sense, especially if they're going to be rolling out the new Apple TV Plus service. So I think, Les, I'm with you. I'm going to put my money on macOS Hollywood, and it's just a cool name, right? I kind of like it. Rolls off the tongue. So I don't know. What do you think? Do you think macOS Hollywood? If not, do you have other predictions? What could Apple go for? Are they going to stick with outdoor places rather than cities? I mean, this would be the first time, I guess, they really used a city, but it's still a location. And I think that's the only requirement, that it has to be the name of a place in California. So I'm with Les, but if you're not and you have another idea, shoot us an email, maccast@gmail.com. Okay, last thing I want to finish up with you today with is a thing of the moment. This is where I kind of pick something cool that I've been using, that I've discovered, that I like, and I share it with you, Mac or iOS related. This one is the Monoprice Mobile Series USB-C Dock Adapter. And if you're thinking that's a long name, the actual name from the website is Monoprice Mobile Series USB-C to HDMI 4K at 30 Hz, VGA, two port USB 3.0, gigabit RJ45, SD card, USB-C data port, USB-C 100-watt power delivery dock adapter with folding type C connector. Yes, that is a mouthful and obviously a product title that is SEO optimized. Essentially what it is it's a dock. It's a little mini dock, a portable dock. It has a built-in foldable USB-C cord, so you don't need a separate cord, and you can plug it right into any Mac with a, or PC device, any device really, with a USB-C connector. And that USB-C folding cord, I guess, could be a blessing or a curse of the device, depending upon how you think about it. It is pretty short, so it's on a little short leash, but it makes it ultra portable. And what's really, really cool about this device, as you heard in the name of it, is it has a million connectors. It has basically every connector on it that you would want. HDMI, VGA, two USB-A type A connectors, gigabit Ethernet, SD card, including a micro SD card slot, a USB-C data port. It has pass-through power with up to 100 watts of power delivery, USB-C power delivery, which is unusual for a hub at any price. I will tell you, you'll be hard-pressed to find ones that support that much power. As a matter of fact, a lot of them only do 65 watts, which is not great if you have a MacBook Pro that needs 85 watts. It means when you're plugged into the hub and doing pass-through power, you're actually not charging. You're actually just sort of extending your battery life and or slowing down how quickly your battery is depleting. So having a device that will actually support full power pass-through is pretty important. So this device does that. And like I said, it has HDMI and VGA, so you're ready for whatever kind of projector you need to connect to, whether it's an older one or a newer one. And if you're a photographer, SD card slot with both standard and micro SD built in. This is definitely something very handy to have in your computer bag. And it is from Monoprice, so it is at a great price, just $59.99 US. So $60 gives you all of this stuff. I've been using it with my iPad Pro. I haven't been using it a ton, but I've tried it out with the USB connectors, doing some SD photo transfers, and also connecting to my television via HDMI, and it all works beautifully. It works great. I will have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. So it's the Monoprice Mobile Series USB-C dock adapter. Check it out. And with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, the MacCast is a community podcast, so I look forward to receiving your audio comments, your emails. You can send those to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9, and you can leave a voicemail there. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And if you want to follow me on social media between shows, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.